it's always something that slightly disturbs me, the notion of evil. I don't think people are born evil any more than they are born good. And it makes life too easy in a way, just to go, that person's evil, so we can put them in a box marked evil and we don't have to think about why they did what they did or what the effects are. It's just an evil thing and it occurs naturally and we're scared of it and we didn't really analyse it too much. I think we let ourselves off the hook by talking about evil.
And far more interesting as a crime writer to have a much more complicated character. People aren't that simple, are they? To try and examine psychologically why people behave the way they do.
Yeah, and I mean, often it's quite a challenge as a writer to go, do you know what, my baddie, in inverted commas, in this book, is going to be somebody you have sympathy for. By the end of this book, I want you to be rooting for that. You know, you've got to sort of change the rules and mess about with them, or, you know, within 10 pages, you're going to know who done it. And actually, I'm going to make this book about something else. So, you know, because otherwise you find yourself writing the same book and nobody wants to do that.
How important is character? Is it as important as plot, or is plot more important?
They are kind of interchangeable. You know, the plots come out of the characters. But for me, as I said in the session just now, unless you have characters that the reader cares about, doesn't matter how fantastic and labyrinthine the plot is or whatever, I don't think you've got a book. I don't think you've got a novel. You need to have characters that the reader empathises with and roots for and genuinely cares about, whether that be your detective or your victim or whatever it is. Because then you have genuine suspense from page one, I think. That's what's changed certainly in crime fiction in the last sort of 50 years. I mean, when people read Agatha Christie and Dorothy L. Sayers and the Golden Age writers, it wasn't really about character. It was about these fantastic plots and plans and poisonous snakes and all sorts of shenanigans going on. I remember reading one where the butler, in an Agatha Christie novel, and the butler's wife is brutally murdered, and 10 minutes later he's serving everybody drinks. And I just went, this is ridiculous. Now, I mean, what Agatha Christie was a fantastic plotter, but it wasn't character driven, and I think that's what's kind of changed, and now our books start with the characters.
And Doc D.I. Tom Thorne has been in with 9 novels you've written now.
Yes.
Or certainly in 8 of them, and yeah, a little bit in one of them. How has he developed? How have you made him develop over the last...
Well, hopefully he's developed in that the reader knows as much about Tom Thorne at any one time as I do. I genuinely don't have a kind of plan for him. I don't have a big, thick dossier in a file somewhere that tells me everything about him.
I was amazed to hear that. I thought you'd have worked out a very complicated biography of him.
I mean, I decided not to, which has made life difficult sometimes, because I start a new book and I kind of go, right, how old is he again? What colour are his eyes? And I realise I've not really talked about, and I've never really described him facially. But that's doing the reader's job for them. You know, I know that every reader I meet who's read the Tom Thorne books, they have a very fixed idea of exactly what he looks like and what he's like. And that's what reading is.
You
that's
don't
what
want to tread
kind
on
of.
That.
Well, you know, no, I don't. And I've been to book group discussions sometimes where they've been talking about one of the Thorne books where there's arguments, where somebody will go, oh, he's got lovely warm eyes, Tom Thorne. And somebody else, no, he's not. He's got dark, scary eyes. And I go, great, you're both right.
And what about the other characters? They're just as important, presumably, the baddies and the victims.
Yeah, you can't have one very nicely three-dimensional character and then a bunch of two-dimensional characters. You've got to make every character sort of live and breathe on the page. And it's sort of an acting exercise. I mean, I come from a performance background. When I left school, I thought I wanted to be an actor, and so on. I did a lot of acting. And I love that. I love getting inside, especially a baddie's head. I mean, it is quite fun at the end of the day to sort of, wow.
Indulge
I had some,
your darker side.
Yeah, indulge your darker side. It's great. So it is. It's putting yourself inside characters' heads, trying to find their voices, trying to find something about them that readers will be able to hook into and go, yeah, I kind of know that person. Because we all know a variety of people, and we all know some very bad people. We do. There's a lot of psychopaths out there.
Well, as it came out in the discussion, we're all capable of doing bad things. If the perfect set of circumstances happens to us, if maybe one of our family were threatened or something happened just to make us snap, that's the intriguing side of what makes people...
It is. That's far more intriguing and interesting to me than the kind of patterned serial killer who does what he does because he was made to wear his mum's dresses when he was a kid, or he was locked in a cellar or something. I'm much more interested in ordinary people living ordinary lives who suddenly find themselves in a situation where they do something terrible. Maybe the only terrible thing they ever do, but it will affect the rest of their lives. Yeah, we're all capable of that.
It's like your current novel, Good as Dead, that starts with a twist.
Well, it does, and it's about a good man. I mean, it's about a good man who does a terrible thing because he's driven to this point where he can't do anything else. And that does interest me. And by the end of it, I do want... I mean, I've had emails from people going, he made me cry. I mean, he's arguably the bad guy in the book.
And yet
arguably.
You're sympathetic to him right from the start.
Well, I want the reader to be. I mean, you mess about with these things that, you know, unless you kind of break these rules and change them and modify them, then the crime novel, as with any other novel, will just sort of stultify and become samey. And anything that's kind of groundbreaking. I mean, I was a huge fan of Columbo when I was a kid. And there's a TV show that broke all the rules that kind of said, we're going to show you who done it. That's what we're going to start with. And then the rest of it is just all about, is he going to catch him? How's he going to catch him? And it became this incredibly iconic TV show. So I think, yes, you need to know the rules before you can break them. But breaking them is great fun.
What are the other important rules, do you think? What are the unbreakable ones?
Well, for me, one of the unbreakable ones is that your killer has to be in plain sight. If you are going to have a killer that your cop is trying to catch, the kind of classic whodunit thing, it needs to be a killer that the reader sees at various points through the book. And so then they're going, is it the mild-mannered janitor? Is it the other cop? Is it that guy we saw in the newsagents? Whatever it might be. It can't be somebody who just leaps out of a cupboard in chapter 48 and they go, well, he's the killer. I haven't seen him before. You know, I do think that's a bit of a cheat. It's about also, you can't withhold too much information from a reader. There can't be lots of information that your detective knows but just doesn't let on to the reader. So there are certain, you know, I know when I feel cheated as a reader. I read a lot of crime fiction, I always have, and I know when I feel cheated, so I'll try very hard not to do that to my readers.